I'm Jeremy Hobson, and this is a special edition of the Here and Now podcast. The Canadian TV show Schitt's Creek, that's S-C-H-I-T-T-S, launched its fifth season this week on Pop TV in the U.S. It is the story of the wealthy Rose family that suddenly loses everything and is forced to move to a dumpy motel in a small rural town that they once bought as a joke, a town called Schitt's Creek. The show stars Catherine O'Hara as Moira Rose, Eugene Levy as her husband Johnny Rose, Annie Murphy as their daughter Alexis, and Daniel Levy as their son David. Here's a scene from the show.
Hey, well, you could have dropped me off back there.
Oh, don't be silly, honey. We're happy to drive you right to the front door.
Yeah, this is an iconic moment in all of our lives, and I think we should experience it to the fullest.
We're very proud of you, Alexis.
Thank you.
Is that appropriate attire for high school, do you think?
Yeah, well, what's wrong with it?
Well,
now you're making me nervous.
Okay, just don't trust anyone that wants to be your friend on the first day, okay?
And you mustn't let anyone push you around. I will not relive that bullying nightmare.
I wasn't bullied.
She doesn't mean you, Alexis.
It wasn't that bad.
That's the heartbreaking part. You're so blissfully unaware.
Okay, I'm gonna go.
Okay. I think you're brave.
Well, that's very nice of you to say, David.
Okay, he's being sarcastic.
What? Oh.
It's a defense mechanism from all that bullying.
Oh, my God.
Well, in addition to starring in the show, Eugene Levy and his son Daniel Levy are also the co-creators and co-executive producers, and Dan Levy is the showrunner. I sat down with them this week in New York.
Thank you so much for having
Pleasure.
Us.
Pleasure.
Now, so many titles, first of all. How much of the show are both of you involved in?
All of it, I'd say.
Well,
you created it.
Yeah.
We created the show. We kind of put it on its tracks, and the train is now on the tracks and headed to different junctions.
This is an experience. This is a really sort of visual experience you're painting for all of us.
It's been listen, from where we started on the thing to right now, which is a very exciting time for the show, it's really kind of mushroomed in terms of awareness and just getting feeling the love from critics and fans and very exciting.
I mean, to your point, I think a lot of that has to come with the fact that we are involved in basically every element of the show. We're in the edit rooms, the writers' rooms, the production offices.
Where did the idea come from in the first place? Because it's a very different show than anything else I've seen.
Thank you very much.
In a great way. I mean, I've watched every episode of it so far.
That's great. I brought the idea, sort of the first germ of an idea, to my dad very early on. The premise of playing on this sort of cultural awareness we now have of how wealthy people live. I think through reality television, we've been able to get an incredibly dimensional, whether we want it or not, idea of how wealthy people live their lives. And I thought it could be an interesting premise to examine as a comedy what would happen if all the money was taken away and these people were forced to confront what really matters in their lives without the band-aids of money to sort of solve the problem. And I brought the idea to my dad thinking, you know, his comedic sensibility is something that is very specific and grounded in something real. And I thought it could really lend itself to this concept, which I think has the potential or had the potential to go quite broad and cartoony. It needed the opposite. It needed something, an infusion of real, genuine comedy.
Well, it was the idea of being a fly on the wall, let's say, in the Kardashians, you know, home. When a family has a lot of money and you see how everybody operates, being that same fly on the wall with all that money taken away actually was a very kind of interesting premise.
And when you say cartoonish, one of the things about this show, and I know that you've both talked about this before, is that because we get to know the characters and we see them in serious situations as well as funny moments, the comedy works even better.
Well, that's the it's a tack that we took, that Dan took right off the top, and that was kind of a comedic tone that we had in the movies that Chris Guest and I did together,
Best in Show and others.
Yeah, which is a grounding of character, where characters are relatively you know, real, where you never step outside of your character's boundaries to get a laugh. You know, everything comes naturally from character. And if you do that successfully, you can do some wonderful things.
And we always approach the show from day one as if it were a drama. And it is. I mean, inherently, it's quite tragic what happens to this family. And the comedy really comes from the characters interacting with each other and interacting with their circumstance. So I think because of that, because it's rooted in something real and we're not necessarily playing huge gags, you're able to tightrope walk that fine balance between comedy and also exploring slightly more emotional moments and revelations as well.
Another thing that I was thinking about is that fashion actually plays a pretty big role in the show. Every single character has something that they wear that's pretty unique.
Yeah.
Including you.
Certainly. You know, I think it was really important for me that fashion played a part, a big part in this show. I think because it was an area where we could explore character and not have to write it. I think exposition can be a pretty tedious thing to write, constantly reminding audience of the circumstance. And what clothes do in our show is act as a sort of perpetual reminder of where these people came from without having to continually say, remember that time when? Mm-hmm. And in the process, we really got to explore not just the past and the kinds of clothes that these people invested money in, but also how they chose to express themselves. And that, I think, juxtaposed against the small town in a way almost adds an extra layer of comedy to the world.
Now you can see where these people came from just by looking at them, by what they're wearing.
A wig store, for one. Because your wife on the show, played by Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah.
By the way, you two have been husband and wife more than once now on screen.
We've done a few things together over the years, Catherine and I. Yeah, we were husband and wife in Best in Show. We were husband and wife in A Mighty Wind.
Right.
We were husband and wife in Over the Hedge.
What do you think it is about the chemistry that the two of you have that works so well time after time with different characters?
You know, I think it's because we have the same style of working. You know, we both come out of improvisational background, mm-hmm. but we like to know what we're doing. We like to know that everything is set. We like to be prepared. We don't like surprises necessarily. It's not that kind of comedy that we're into. And over the years, you know, I mean, Catherine and I are probably get the most nervous when things are a little too willy-nilly in terms of, just go for it. Just wing it. Just see what can happen. You know, we're basically actors at heart, not comedians. And we like to get our laughs through character. So everything's got to be set to the point where we know exactly what the character is going to be doing.
How much improv is there in what you're doing with Schitt's Creek?
I would say not very much. I mean, I would say it's 90% to 95% scripted, beautifully scripted. And
I think it's that extra 5-10% that really adds that – it's like that special sauce to the show, giving people the freedom to experiment or, you know, ad lib a little bit. Really sort of customizes each character. And I think from an acting standpoint, it allows you a little bit of freedom to like nestle into who you're playing and feel, you know, free to explore that a little bit. And I think that really sort of speaks to our general sort of motto in the show, which is that collaboration is key. And as a writer, if there's an actor that proposes a line that's funnier than something we've written, we're going to go for it. There's really no ego involved.
Can you think of an example of that happening? Something that you remember that was not scripted?
Well, I don't know. Usually at the end of scenes, when a scene is about to end and a character wants to kind of go on, knowing that they've got the ending to the scene, but what the hell? And a lot of times those lines are used.
Stay
I'm trying to think of one
little
offhand.
Buttons. I know that there's a scene in the first season of the show between Annie and I where we're fighting over who sleeps in the bed closest to the door, because the idea is if a murderer were to come into the motel, whoever's sleeping closest to the door would get murdered first. Right. And in the process of doing the scene, Annie came up with this line, which was, "You get murdered first for once." And then it became this sort of back and forth, and we really ran with it.
I need this bed.
I need it.
So. You know what, David? You get murdered first for once.
No, you get murdered
David,
first.
David, you get murdered first.
No, you.
Yes, you get murdered it. First, David.
I mean, I have to sort of credit our cast. We have an incredible cast who have, from day one, walked into these characters fully realized and sort of textural and dimensional. We mm-hmm. haven't had to, you know, go through the season one or season two struggles of finding people's footing. There really has been strong character work and fully realized characters from day one. And we've been very fortunate, because what these actors have brought to these roles has added that extra layer of comedy that, as much as I'd love to take credit for as a writer, there's just some things like, you know, when Catherine O'Hara does a, you know, first walked in and did her accent as Moira.
You try enjoying a puff pastry with everyone around you scratching.
I could write very funny things for her, but nothing would be as funny as her delivering those lines in that accent. I mean, she just has the
She
ability.
Came up with that herself?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Catherine's quite amazing. You know, she – and that's why over the years it's always been so great to work with her. And on a show like this, you know, when you hire Catherine, you're getting more than just somebody who can deliver lines mm-hmm. funny. She brings everything – to what she does. She adds so much to the character. She has her own ideas. The wigs, for example, mm-hmm. were her idea. So Moira would wear a different wig depending on, you know, her emotional right. mindset of that particular day. She modeled her character after
physically?
After the
Daphne
particular
Guinness.
That's right. And that was
sort of
like
a British fashion plate. Hmm. She sort of brought in some images of a few people, and fashion women, and we really sort of looked at those and said, okay, how do we make this?
Well, that excited you.
How do we televise this? How do we make this like digestible for a large mm-hmm. audience?
Yeah, when that came up, I remember I was at that meeting. Dan and Catherine and I went to discussing the character way back in the beginning, and it was when she talked about that, you kind of your eyes lit up, because you could see the potential mm-hmm. in what this character would look like. And, you know, I could see the encyclopedia of outfits going through your head right then and there at that second. Mm-hmm. That's what she brings to the part. I mean, she adds so much.
I want to ask you, and let's listen to a clip from the show. This is a scene with a conversation between David, played by you, Daniel, and your boyfriend on the show and business partner, Patrick.
David, I've spent most of my life not knowing what right was supposed to feel like, and then I met you, and everything changed. You make me feel right, David.
That is quite possibly one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard anyone say. Outside of the Downton Christmas special.
It's the truth.
I know. It's just that my truth is that I am damaged goods, and this has really messed things up for me.
So one of the things about this show that I've never seen anywhere else is that you have a gay relationship that is never talked about by anybody in the town. The parents don't react. It's mm-hmm. not – it's just completely normal.
Yes, as it should be.
Right. But I mean that's not something that has been seen on television before as far as I can think of.
I tried to write my experience. I tried to write an experience that I know that friends of mine have had, and none of our experiences have really come with a lesson to be learned. I think that's the big thing that seems to be connecting with people, is the fact that there is an ease and to the relationship, and that we write the relationship in a very casual, in a casual way, and that was very deliberate. I think because, you know, we're so accustomed to seeing queer love stories that are put in jeopardy by outside forces. I mean, you know, it's the sort of Brokeback Mountain effect of anytime you see two queer people in love, there has to be some kind of consequence. So to propose a world where there is no consequence and two people can love each other sort of wholly
In small town America.
In small town America. And ultimately show that what comes from that is freedom and love and joy. It's a form, I guess, of sort of quiet protest, saying that this is how things should be. And again, you know, the choice to leave homophobia out of the equation on our show was deliberate. Because I'm a firm believer that we learn through what we see, and when we feel like we are being taught a lesson, we have our guards up because we don't want to be schooled on something, but to present something as it should be, plainly, calmly, respectfully, I think has a much more powerful effect in people's homes, and the letters that we've received from families who have watched the show together, and it's changed their own relationships. It's, I guess, it's a testament to the fact that it does seem to be working, even if it's just one family at a time.
Yeah, a love story is just a love story, and that's the tone that's set on the show. And as Dan just said, the effects are quite amazing when it comes to how it's affecting, you know, people out there.
And that was your experience.
Yeah. It was never questioned for me. I mean, sure, there was like, you know, bullying in high school. But for me, my experience has been relatively easy compared to what is happening in many parts of this country and others. So, yeah, I mean, I think meeting people in a respectful way and not pinning people against a wall with an agenda, but rather just sort of saying this is what we're doing, buy in or don't. But it's seemingly helping people, which is an incredibly rewarding part of the job.
Yeah, it just normalizes everything.
By the way, I said small town America. Where is Schitt's Creek? Have you actually said where it is physically? Do
nope.
we know?
Nope.
We haven't.
It's like Springfield in The Simpsons.
Yeah.
We don't know.
We have not. Schitt's Creek is Schitt's Creek. We don't know where it is. We haven't said where it is.
I mean, it's a Canadian show, so we can sort of, you know, put the pieces together. But, you know, part of not exploring the world around it is to help create a sense of isolation. I think for us that was always deliberate to you know, the only cities around Schitt's Creek are the
Elmdale,
the Elm Hamlets,
Elm Grove,
Elm Vale, Elm Glen,
yeah.
Elm Grove, and that really was, you know, in terms of the narrative, it's a way of saying, okay, focus on what's happening in this town, and we don't need to worry about
nothing else matters.
Where it is, yeah.
Why is it a Canadian show, by the way? I don't think I've ever watched a Canadian show before this, but why did you do it with a Canadian? It's
Have you
pop
ever seen
TV,
a hockey
right?
game?
Yes.
Well, that's a Canadian show.
Ish, I guess, yeah. It was where it was CBC was interested in the show, and they were interested in making a full season, and we said yes. And Pop came on board after that, and that sort of completed our North American a broadcast mm-hmm. situation. And then Netflix came on internationally with ITV. And it was Home that really first saw something in this show. And we're quite proud of the fact that it's done so well as a Canadian show.
There's some very good things coming out of Canada now. On a production basis, television and film, I think Canada can compete with just about anybody right now. And we're very proud our show takes place in Canada, in Toronto, done in Toronto. And but it looks pretty damn good. The talent up there is quite amazing.
A lot of the people that have cameo appearances on the show appear to be Canadian actors. I can't tell quite, but it sounds like a little bit like they might be.
You hear a whisper of an accent?
The Blouse Barn lady. She's Canadian, right?
She is.
Yeah, right.
You can hear it every
Robin
now.
Robin Duke, wonderful.
You can hear it every now and then on certain words, actually. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, I haven't been able to tell overall that, oh, yeah, this person's from
we
Canada.
We might be immune,
this person's
Dad.
From Canada.
We might just
spend too much time in Canada.
We've been
I've got
too immune to,
I've
the,
got a
to
pretty,
the voice.
I've got a pretty good ear, although I do bracket the outs and the boots.
Right. How many more seasons do you know at this point? How many more seasons there will be?
I don't know, as long as it's kind of, you know, still interesting. You know, there's still stories to tell. You know, I would say you never want to get to a point where you're saying, oh, this season wasn't as good as last season. But, you know, I mean, there's we're having fun right now and we're still going.
And I think the great thing about being a smaller show is that you don't have the same kinds of, you know, it's not like – this is a huge network show and it's like a gazillion dollar empire and you're now being kept on the air because it's a huge, you know, moneymaker. We don't have that kind of weight on our shoulders. So the storytelling, deciding when it's time to close this book is going to be on our terms, and it's going to be a time that, you know, feels right and is respectful to our fan base. Because I think when you have people that have sat down and watched seasons and episodes of your show, that's a lot of time that people have committed. And, you know, we want to respect that experience for the people who are watching it and never want to leave them astray. So I think it'll become very clear to us when we want to when we want to call it. And that'll just be, you know, when the story is decided to end itself.
How does it feel right now to have reached this point where there's a profile of you in the New York Times where I, you know, months ago said, oh, I want to do something on the new season of Schitt's Creek, and I had to fight off other NPR shows to get to talk to you guys, that you've become, you know, it started more niche and it's become much more – people – everybody knows about this show now that I've been talking to. I said I'm talking to the Levies and they're like, wow, I love that show.
Well, as I said before, it's pretty amazing. You know, we've worked very hard on the show to make it as good as we possibly can. And we've created characters that the audience really has a very strong emotional involvement with. They truly care about the characters and what happens to the characters. And, boy, I don't know. I think just in terms of awareness,
it's a surreal experience, really. Yeah. And I don't think it's you know, talking to you today, it's like, it's just surreal. It's because we shoot the show up in Canada, and when we're not shooting the show in a studio without any windows, we're in a writer's room or we're in an edit suite. So to get out and actually hear from people and talk to people about their experience watching the show is so rewarding, but also just it's a trip for sure.
It's been an amazing year for the show, particularly as the year kind of came to an end and we found ourselves being on, you know, different top 10 lists. I mean, publication after publication, and that was like major head spin.
And we were at the Critics' Choice Awards. And we're just this like
– yeah.
It's like, a table of Canadians wondering how like, are we
like,
here?
Like we're just like – like we're doing a regular show, eh?
It was wild.
Daniel and Eugene Levy starring in Schitt's Creek. The new season is out this week in the United States. Thanks to both of you. It's a great show. I hope people check it out if they haven't already, although based on what we just talked about, they probably have. But thanks a lot for joining us.
That would be good. Pleasure, Jerry.
And the first four seasons of the show are available on Netflix. You can find this conversation at hereandnow.org where you can share it. And while you're at it, take a moment to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for listening to this special edition of the Here and Now podcast.